Welcome to the TK Jingles podcast for June 30th, 2016. This is Jerry Negrelli. I am back after a long hiatus working on TK Jingles Live 2016, even liver. Today we're going to focus on that event. I'm going to give you some behind the scenes of how it all came together, some of the things that we put together, play you some of the demos and bonus extended songs we did that night. And what better way to open this podcast than with a song that opened the show that night, TK Jingles. I knew a man played jingles on the radio. It started several years ago with Gary Braun, Hootie Ann, and the Blowfish too. And now it's gotten a little bigger though. 2,000 songs about nose, emails, faxes, and nose. And news, Tony's laundry, or whatever. You remember that time he wanted a Subway sandwich at the Super Bowl? Guess what? Now that's a song. But how about the time they laughed at the guy killed by a fish? Well, that's also a song. Kippy laughed when that man died, but now Kippy died, and that's something we can sing about too, laugh, laugh, 'cause this is TK Jingles, it's TK Jingles, TK Jingles, enjoy. Show, please enjoy it now. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be a little bit different than usual. It's basically an interview with myself. I've structured it with a few questions around how this whole thing came together, how you prepared for it the night before, the pre-show, an encounter with the sales weasels, the story of the show itself. So there's going to be a lot of talking. I'm also going to integrate some songs we prepared just for the live event, sprinkling those throughout here. Mostly stuff I did, because that's the extended songs that I did. Next week will be more traditional. We'll play TK Jingles from the website and things like that. I'd like to hear what your favorite moment, though, is. If you were able to listen on the Periscope, or if you listen live, email podcast@tkjingles.com. Let me know what your favorite moment was. I know that I've got a couple, and we'll visit some of them today. I also wanted to give a huge thank you to John Neisminger and Jason Fuse for their contributions to some of the instrumental tracks and for playing live. I really wanted to make sure they had a good showcase to do that, and even then, they were bending over backwards to accommodate folks that wanted to sing with their amazing music behind it. So thank you guys so much. Goodbye RG3 wouldn't exist. Many of the songs here, even in this episode, wouldn't exist without the contributions of these folks. So, having said all that, we're going to play some songs and then just listen to me talk about memories of that night. And then over the next 9 weeks until Tony comes back, we will revisit some of the great moments from that night as well as more traditional podcast material.
TK Jingles is going live again. And maybe if we're lucky, Gene will bring some old hens. June 25th, Rockville, Maryland. Is where you should go. Why is a sequel even necessary? I mean, last time we were joined by Tony, Nige, and Gary. We may never top it, but that won't stop us from doing it again.
So last year we had a little get-together at Kilroy's here in Springfield / Annandale, Virginia. And we had about 75 to 100 people show up. It was so much fun, but it was exhausting, and it was a lot of work to get that thing together, and I really thought it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Tony showed up, Gary came, Nigel came. We didn't really account for any of that. Folks that were coming really were just coming for the jingles. And I, personally, putting it all together, I hosted at Kilroy's because, you know, the fear was, hey, 10 people might show up, and if they do, I want to travel 2 minutes from my house, and I'll do it there, and I'll have fun, and we'll be done with it. Because really, I was doing it for anybody that was interested. All the jinglers, I wanted to get everybody together, just have fun. It was more of a party. It wasn't a concert. I was very careful to try to couch it in those terms because I didn't want people showing up and expecting that we were going to jam and have some amazing show because we'd never really met most folks. We'd never been together before. So the idea we were putting a show on was pretty absurd. And anyway, it was a smash success. It was so much fun. Tony had such a great time, stayed for 2 hours. And my thought was, how can we top this? You know, this is as good as it gets. And so I really didn't think about doing it again until maybe December or January timeframe came around. And the podcast was moving along, and I had started incorporating this ridiculous Schwitz break into the episodes of the podcast. And so as January came around, that's usually when I start thinking about what's the next big thing I want to do for TK Jingles. Is it going to be an end-of-the-season song or a Kickstarter? What is it I want to do this year? And I started thinking about TK Jingles Live 2016. Do I really want to do it again? And so it didn't have a lot of appeal to me because of all the work that had gone into it last time and the thought that Tony probably wasn't going to come this time. I mean, I thought from his perspective, he would look at it as, hey, that was fun, that was cool, but, you know, I have better things to do. So if we did it, I was thinking of calling it TK Jingles Live 2, this time Tony's not coming, or TK Jingles Live 2016, waiting for Tony, like waiting for Godot or something. And so anyway, the podcast is really what pushed me over the edge. I had begun doing this ridiculous Schwitz break, and I had this vision of performing the show and suddenly yelling Schwitz break and putting on a bathrobe and singing Schwitz songs. And the idea of that was so ridiculous and just tickled me so much that, you know, nobody, because clearly nobody in their right mind was coming for that. But the novelty of that, the absurdity of that, just that idea, that's what prompted me to do this this event. So I decided that at that point when I had that idea, all right, I'm doing it. So I started putting together a plan, and I thought if we do it, we should do it in Rockville so that maybe Tony will come, even though I don't want to, you know, I don't expect him to come. I don't want to make him feel guilty into coming. But maybe, you know, people like David Aldridge, folks that had said they couldn't come last time, or folks like Gary, who said that Springfield was an awfully long way for him, I thought, hey, they all go to Rockville for the studio, so maybe we can do it in Rockville for this. So Steve Lipton recommended a great barbecue joint that was bigger than Kilroy's, that could hold maybe 150 people or so. So it'd be a little bit bigger, because I figured, eh, that was so much fun if people come, then, you know, I want to be a little bit larger. When I went to announce the show, I remember I walked in and the first thing Tony said was, oh, I hope you're here to announce another Jingle Fest because you know that we're all coming and we're really excited about it. And Jeannie and Gary nodded along like, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to be there. And that really took me by surprise because I never expected they would come. I mean, the relationship with myself and TK Jingles and the official show has evolved over time where it's now this symbiotic thing where there really is a back and forth between what we do in this little universe here and what permeate, you know, what makes it onto that show and vice versa. So that's really cool how that's happened. But even still, you know, I feel like this could end any day when they decide they're bored or sick of it. So I don't, you know, I'm not really planning too far ahead. I'm enjoying it while we can. And as long as Tony's got a show, and as long as he still likes what we're doing, I'm going to keep doing it. So that then changed the venue and, they decided they wanted to host it somewhere bigger. So then that proceeded to create a big back and forth around the venue. And we'll talk about that next.
Streptococcus in your urine flow. penicillin won't cure it. So do the natural thing, go find a Burger King. Got a touch of that E. coli. Stick up the number one with fries. If the chemicals include it, you'll be just fine, though you're infected with staph. And when you get the chance, go eat at Dairy Queen. Locate the Vital Wendy's or a Burger King. Fight herpes with some onion rings. Oh yeah. Have syphilis or private slice. Try something else from Five Guys.
Now, like I said, I had tried to host this at a barbecue joint in Rockville, but the station, ESPN 980, really wanted to get involved. And I was very hesitant about that because this was my event and all the littles were doing our thing. And it was not an official event, but they said, hey, we want to help you. We'll find a bigger place. We'll make this a bigger deal because we think there will be at least 300 or 400 people there. So we really want to promote this and we want to cut some radio ads for it. We want to promote it on the show all the time. We want this to be a major thing for Tony and for all the littles. So they identified this place, Penn Social in DC, but there was a catch. Tony's big thing with what I was doing was that he wanted it to be free for the littles, and he wanted the place that hosted it to provide food or provide some accommodations, and it should all be free, or at least free for me, free for us. So that was a sticking point with Penn Social. They wanted a deposit. And we must have gone 6 or 7 weeks with zero progress between the station and Penn Social and Nigel and myself, where nothing happened. And we were getting closer and closer to actually, you know, people making plans to come out here, and we still didn't have a place. So finally, Nigel took out his credit card and said, I'm going to pay for this. And he decided, just to make sure that it would happen, he put down the deposit. And you know, I don't know that Tony knows all the details around that, but because he mentioned on the show last week, he wasn't sure if we had to pay for the venue. But I think that at that point is when they decided to get a sponsor, and then Window Nation, you know, reimbursed him or got involved or whatever at that point. But man, you know, the sales team, the ESPN team, they were really supportive up to a point, and then there was just this sticking point around the price and all that. And honestly, that place should have been free because we gave them so much damn business. So, you know, if I had any hand in the negotiations, we would have settled that pretty damn quickly, or we just would have found somewhere else. And next year, if we go there, we're going to have to talk about that fee because that's ridiculous. And we had 500 plus people there spending money, and they didn't reserve the venue for us in any way. When I got there, and we'll talk about that later, when we got to the event, there were party bros and random dudes and people playing games and hanging out for happy hour the whole time. And they only really left because happy hour ended. It's not like, you know, that they were forced out. You know, the drink prices went back to full price when all the littles showed up. So the party bros kind of moved along. So that place made a killing on it. So anyway, long story short, Nigel really stepped up, made sure that we got that in place, and helped settle what was a pretty frustrating and exhausting situation getting to that point.
Tim Kirkchen's at the store.
Timmy Kirkchen.
Buying grapefruit juice and more.
Timmy Kirkchen.
He wears a giant smile.
Timmy Kirkchen.
When he's in the produce aisle. What has Timmy got? Oh, it's avocado, Timmy.
Timmy.
Tomato and cilantro and avocado, Timmy.
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 mixing up some guaco with avocado. Goes great on his nachos, Tim's avocado. Humming Desperado, buying avocado. Timmy has a motto, I love avocado. Christening his yato, SS avocado. The pattern is a scotto, is avocado. Shopping cart bank shotto, Mr. Avocado. All of his gelato's favorite avocado. Sell him on his taco, throwing avocado. Tropical climato grows avocado. Timmy won the lotto, blew it on avocado. Hop the flight to Morocco, just for avocado. Say it real staccato, I love avocado. He is the mascotto, Mr. Avocado. Feeling for some spots, so every avocado. Reds at Joey Votto, Tim has avocado. Garnish his cremato with avocado. The color of his auto, you guessed it, avocado. Seems an awful lotto, rhymes with avocado. And more, but I forgot about avocado.
So in preparation for TK Daniels Live 2016, we had to create a set list, and I wanted it to be as scripted and seamless as possible. Last year, there was a lot of switching between instruments and karaoke tracks. We had a lot of stop and start. Every song is like a minute and a half long, and yet we had individual tracks for every one, and there was a break and applause between every one of those things. And it dragged on like a Bruce Springsteen concert, 3 or 4 hours. It really went on a long time, and which is great, but I remember being disappointed that by the end of the show, there were like 20 people left because we played for so long. I think we played till 11 o'clock or something. So I wanted it to move quickly so that there was no time for people to get bored and that they would keep laughing, keep clapping, and everybody would have a good time. And so with that in mind as well, I really tried to get everybody to focus on red meat. What are the songs people want to hear? Not what are the songs you like, but what do you think that folks really will enjoy? And Brad Weiss was so good about this last year with his set. He did Mellow Yellow and Larry King. And I remember thinking, what are those songs? That doesn't seem like that's really his favorites or his best necessarily. But he was thinking the crowd will really dig these songs. And it's true. Larry King was a really big sing-along song when he performed that. And so Brad really helped inspire that whole piece there, even though he was unfortunately not able to join us in person this year. And so since we were also at a larger venue with a dedicated sound system, a dedicated projector, I wanted to take advantage of that. Last year, we had some music videos and we had lyrics projected behind me, but you would never have known that because the projector that I bought via my Kickstarter money cost about $100 or $200 or something and had enough power on it to maybe project like in your bathroom. So when it came time to project in the show, where there was still natural light coming in and bar lights and stuff, you could see a little faint outline that there was clearly something we were projecting, but you would have no idea what it was. So the vision of performing with lyrics and videos behind you, I made this complicated video for We Didn't Start the Fire, and nobody saw it because you couldn't see anything. And then to top that off, the projector was on a stool, so we kept stepping in front of it. So even if you could see it, the performers kept like literally putting the projector right up against their belly button and like, all right, well, it's projected on their belly button where nobody can see. So that was just ridiculous. But anyway, now we had a better venue. So I wanted to plan some segments and incorporate some things into the show. So the first thing was an in memoriam segment. So Jason, Luke, Steve, and I exchanged a zillion emails, like 90 emails or 100 emails or something, working on this in memoriam idea. And Jason ultimately did the production on it, along with a lot of graphic help from Luke and Steve. And that thing was just the highlight of the show for me. One of the best parts about it, just so darn cool. And what initially was hatched is like, let's do a memoriam to Beatrice and make like a little sad montage for Beatrice, evolved into this, hey, how about everything that's dead to the show and we can make like an Oscars clip. And it was just so cool. And so then carrying on the video theme, I wanted everybody, as much as possible, where it made sense, to have a walk-up song. So I had the thing that really pushed that, there were two. Jason Fuse, who's from Atlanta, Georgia, Tony has started saying he's from Los Angeles. For no reason that we can understand, he just started saying Jason from Los Angeles, Jason from LA, which I don't know where he got that idea from, but now he says it, and Jason's totally playing into it. And people actually came up to him at Even Liver and said, "Hey, you know, it's so great," and they were encouraging him. "It's so great you moved to LA, the LA jingle scene, and you're really pursuing music as a career. Good for you." And hopefully he corrected them and said, "Actually, I'm not doing that. That's just a joke." But so I really wanted to play up on that with Jason's walk up, that he's the pride of LA. And then, of course, like the Schwitz nonsense, one of the other staples of the podcast is Sol from Chile and how she ruins Robert Berg's songs. So I really wanted to find a way to get her involved. So she wouldn't record a video, but she was willing to record audio for a small fee. I think like $5 or something. But she recorded a walk-up video audio track for Robert Berg to introduce him. And it turned out so much better than I ever could have imagined, because I gave her a script and I expected her to butcher some of the song titles, but she like amalgamated them together or something. I feel like she's trolling me at this point. Like, she knows that it's funny, so now she's just like playing into it. Her mispronunciation of the Larry King and the Middle-Aged Man and the Swordfish, she made those into one song. It's just brilliant. And then the last big thing, other than the fast-moving karaoke tracks, the In Memoriam, the walk-up songs, was the Schwitz break. And so Steve and Jason have always been really supportive of that, and Robert is like really supportive as a fan of it, but he hadn't done one yet. But I really wanted him to be involved because he was pushing for AARP, which is the song that introduced the Schwitz in the first place. And so if he was going to be performing AARP with us, then he had to do a Schwitz song. So he had to put that together. And we started brainstorming via email. And the original medley we came up with was like 9, 10, maybe even 11 minutes long. And the final one was 6, by the way, which is still a long time for Schwitz songs. But be thankful, it could have been twice as long. And one of the songs that Robert came up with was a Peter Gabriel song. And I only know one Peter Gabriel song. So when he said, "Oh, I want to do this Peter Gabriel song," I said, "Oh, is it In Your Eyes? Because I know that song." I said, "Oh, and actually that would really work. You could do like With Four Guys. And hey, there's four of us. And we could sing about four dudes going to the Schwitz. This would be great. And then we can perform it." And so that was one of those, like, I couldn't fall asleep that night until 2 a.m. because I had to get up and record it because the idea was just so stuck in my brain. So let's now, after I've kind of given you the backstory of how we put all the set list together, let's enjoy a song that I ultimately had to cut because I thought it was way too long and unfamiliar to the crowd and probably not funny enough to be part of the final set list. But this song, With Four Guys, came out of all the prep for TK Jingles Live, Even Live.
Lost, I got so lost one time, way downtown. Ran out of gas out in front of the Schwitz. I thought I could run away from that warehouse in the dark, but whichever run like hell, but I do like steaks medium well. A windowless door slammed shut behind, and I'm trapped here on the inside with four guys.
The steam, the heat,
with four guys
I am complete.
With four guys,
barely even friends.
With four guys,
and somebody bent.
With four guys,
I can't find a way out of this freaking place.
Four guys,
with something that just smacked me in the face.
Now, Bonnie Burko wasn't able to join us last year, and she's always held that against me and really wanted to be able to join us this year. But once again, just like last year, she had a wedding. So TK Jingles Live is consistently the Saturday between Father's Day and July 4th. So circle that on your calendars. We'll probably do that again, if we do it again. That'll be around the same time. And I picked that date because we didn't start the fire. I vividly remember that aired on like June 30th or so. It was the last day of Tony's season. in 2013, and that was like the seed of doing a live show, was basking in the glow of how much fun it was to hear that on the air. I said, oh, I wish that there was a way that we could keep the fun going and like celebrate Tony's show and have some kind of get together of littles and just kind of enjoy this. And so that then ultimately now 3 years later has evolved into this live event about a, you know, that I never could have foreseen then, you know, that little seed of an idea. I couldn't imagine people really would get together to hear jingles for 3 hours. But anyway, so Bonnie wasn't gonna be able to make it again this year because she had another wedding, but she really wanted to see everyone, especially the out of town jinglers. So she organized a get together at the Palm. And I didn't RSVP to that. I really actually was dreading it because I didn't want to be up late. I didn't want to overdo it, getting drinking too much or losing my voice. And in fact, when I went there, it was so damn loud at the Palm that I started to get hoarse by the end of the night. And I remember KJ was getting really hoarse too because it was just so loud in there. And that was what I really had worried about. I mean, I was happy to see everybody, but also, you know, I'm cheap. I don't want to spend $17 for a glass of wine or something. So anyway, it ended up being a great time, and I'm glad that I went. I met Mike from Canada. The Shivleys were there, Carol Connolly, Gabrielle and Steven, and a lot of folks came over. Lewis was there, and if I forgot your name, I'm sorry. I met so many people, but it was really nice because especially people that traveled a long distance made sure they got there early, and they were there that day so that they could enjoy DC on Saturday and then come to the show early. So had a blast doing that. I'm really glad that Bonnie kind of forced the issue on that, and we were able to hurt our liver before even liver without getting too wild. I think I went home at about 11 o'clock, and when I left, I almost got stranded. I had to get an Uber or something because the garage I parked in, and I couldn't understand why it was so cheap. It was like $8 when all the other garages were 20, actually closed at 10 o'clock. So I left at 11, and there was a guy pacing around in there furious because I was the last car in the garage, and he wasn't going to leave until I came back, which I really appreciated, even though he was furious with me. So I was lucky that, you know, he had some kind of pride or whatever. He didn't want to have me locked in his garage, so he stuck around. But I almost ended up staying the whole night downtown, and then it would have been a much different show on Saturday.
He's gonna drop some names, eating steak with Irvin Johnson, golfing with Obama anytime he wants to. Wilbon's fucking awesome. He's gonna drop some names, playing squash with Charles Barkley, NBA TV and TNT. Wilbon's fucking awesome.
Now, he'll call up to the show like, what up, this is Wilbon, then casually work in some 30 names that he will drop at MJ's crib, poolside with gelato. By the way,
you know LeBron's from Chicago.
Hanging with celebrities, Beyonce said just call her B. Bought a suit from Kana Lee, yes he's looking very chic. Wore it once, that's enough, gave it up to charity. And when I say charity, I mean Annie Poalee. Cheap. The freaks, Wilbon's on fleek.
His name dropping in Washington about all of his Chicagoans, and nothing is shocking him cause of where he's dropping in. He's on the west coast again, bought two boats he's yachting in. He skippers his clippers in hopes of being Doc Rivers' friend.
When brittle Virginians get their little blizzards, then Wilbon lounges in the Phoenix seat and blithely belittles them.
He had a big house, true, he bought a new house too, just for his Oxfords, now he calls them house shoes.
Come on with the Callaways, he owes Tone in debt on a bet when his homes are disposable.
He knows Janet and Jesse, Rudy and Randy, even Tito and Andy. Wilbon's around all the 1%ers.
And since he does that, there's no doubt he's a 1%er. The only analytics he's down with is 1%er.
Got game, brings his own bowling ball when he plays and buys a brand new pair of shoes to wear for every frame.
Every frame?
For every frame.
Well, honestly, that's really lame.
Most stats are just specious, uh-huh. But Wilbon's Patrician.
Blue blood.
And so he needed a way to rank his own status.
Come on!
So he invented this, the weighted influence.
Bear with us.
Level based on name drops.
Acronyms.
We call it the Wilbon.
He's gonna drop some names at a spinning class with John Legend. Taught the Dalai Lama how to fight Nevada. Wilbon's fucking awesome. He's gonna drop some names to make a cameo on Empire. Booked a love scene with Alicia Keys. Wilbon's fucking awesome.
So, getting ready for Even Liver that day, I wanted to take advantage of the facility. Last year, Joe Arrow and I ran everything. So Joe ran the soundboard and the computer and the microphones and the speakers and everything there. And I coordinated the set list and sort of emceed the event, kept things moving, kept everybody going, and told folks what to do, and was just running around like a chicken with my head cut off doing all that. And this time, they had a dedicated sound guy at Penn Social, and he was supposed to be there at around 4 o'clock for a sound check, maybe 5 o'clock if he was running late, and he didn't arrive until about 6:30. And so Jason, especially because he had so much equipment to test out and he had an auto-tune pedal and there were all these things that we had to check, was just going nuts with anticipation and dread because the sound guy wasn't there. And then what made things even better is when he actually got there, Rob, who is the coordinator for the event, the AV guy, but not the dedicated sound man, Rob said, to the sound guy, I said, why don't you plug it in over in that port over there? And the guy said, oh, well, yesterday was my first day and that port didn't work. So I got to try this one. And I had better luck with that last night. And so we realized not only was this sound guy really inconsiderate showing up a half hour before the show, but it was his second day working at Penn Social and he had no idea how any of the equipment worked. So this was a harbinger of things to come as we had numerous problems throughout the show with microphones cutting out and instruments not working and lots of things that threw a wrench in the gears. It was just ridiculous. So that was something that was supposed to be better, was kind of better, but not really. And then the other thing, the one that Joe did last year, running all the karaoke tracks off the laptop and the movies and everything, one of Michelle's friends is in a band, a really successful local band that does a lot of weddings and the Marine Corps ball and all these big things. So I asked them, I said, hey, who do you guys use to help like a stagehand or to run your shows? I would love to have them, I'll pay them, have them come help me. I want to have a dedicated guy to run the laptop so it's not me. I don't want to be trapped behind a podium all night. And so their stagehand gave me a call and said, I'd love to do it. Let's set it up. And then like 3 weeks before that, I said, all right, here's the details. It's a laptop. I'm going to have one folder. All you have to do is literally click a button. It's going to be all sequenced. It's in order. There will be cues, and you just run that, and it's just basically pressing a button, and then when Jason and Steve and John Neiswinger have to get together for their live instruments, all you got to do is help them plug stuff in. And so then the stagehand was kind of offended by that. He said, oh, that's all you need me for? Well, that's like monkey work. Anybody could do that. So I tell you what, I've got some other guys that can help. Let me ask them who wants to help, and I'll get back to you. So then I got an email the next day. I said, hi, my name is Mike, and I'd love to help you. And this sounds great. I'll meet you there. And we talked through it. We talked on the phone. He sounded super excited. It was all worked out. And so the day of the event, Mike showed up very punctually, right on time at 5:30 or 6, whenever we decided he should be there. And I walked him through the setup and we got everything going and he had a really good attitude. He was really professional. And I said, oh, by the way, how do you know the members of this band? He said, what band? What are you talking about? I said, well, they referred you to me. He said, oh no, nobody referred anything. I responded to a job posting on the American University job board for the AV department. I'm a student. I just happened to, have this major and I responded to that. Like, wait, what? So this whole thing was just completely outsourced and we really lucked out because not only was he a really good guy, but he was a college student who was also 21, which is a huge risk because 75% of them aren't. So Penn Social wouldn't let anybody in who's under 21. So our AV guy could have been turned away at the door if this hadn't been coordinated properly. So we really lucked out there. And then the last thing was the merchandise booth. Last year, I brought a big box of all the leftover Kickstarter shirts, the orange shirt and the World Tour shirt. And I was excited, like, oh, maybe some people want to buy these at the event. But I was so busy running around with Joe and stuff, there was just literally a box next to the stage that nobody was paying attention to until the show was over and there were like 20 people left. I said, oh, by the way, does anybody want a shirt? And so I might have sold like 5 shirts or something at the very end of the show from people that were loyal enough to stick around till the end or dedicated enough or whatever. But it was a total waste. So I thought, all right, well, this time I want to have a dedicated merch booth because I have some extra shirts again. And the reason for that is that whenever I do one of these Kickstarters or try to raise money to support TK Jingles, there inevitably is some irregular size, like a quadruple XL or a small or something I just don't have a lot of that somebody asks for and I'm out. And so I have to reorder that. And the setup charge for a single shirt is like $80 or $100 plus the cost of doing it and the time. And the shirt guys that I have are unwilling to do a run of like less than 20 shirts because they have to pay for time on the machine. And so it's, so anytime I have to order a specialty size, I have to order at least 20 shirts. So I'm losing money until I'm able to sell like 10 or so of those or something. So, I mean, this whole endeavor is not a moneymaker, as you know, hopefully is pretty well established, even though the Kickstarters have been more successful than I'd hoped. You know, this is hardly something that I'm falling back on as a regular gig. So anyway, Michelle had a friend of hers from yoga who runs the credit card Square reader there. And I have one of those that, oh, great. We'll get her there. She showed up exactly on time at 6 o'clock. She started working, put the whole booth together. Steph, she was awesome. Hopefully you met her if you were at the event. And if we do this again, she's going to be running it again because she did just a fantastic job. But there was a hiccup with the merchandise booth. The frickin' sales weasels. It's something we'd feared from the beginning, and it hadn't reared its head until a half hour before the show. But before I tell you that story, I wanted to make one last plea to get this crap out of my house.
Please buy a shirt. I need to get these boxes out of my house. If you already bought one, then buy one for your spouse. Cut off the sleeves with a pair of scissors. Good God, what a nice blouse. Please buy a shirt or a sticker that would look really great on your car. Maybe buy a shot glass and feature it on your bar. You'll be roaming like Mr. Tony, or at worst, like a classy porn star.
One of the things that Mark Stern was so adamant about during this entire time preparing for Even Liver was that this was my event. This is my thing. They're just happening to show up, and they're putting some money towards reserving the venue, and Window Nation is contributing to that. And that's it. We should thank them. We should mention it in the beginning of the show, whatever, but that's it. There's no other quid pro quo expected, nothing else. And so I have been coordinating directly with Penn Social on my own. The station had nothing to do with any preparation leading up to this. I'd been down there several times. I'd met with the AV folks and the managers of the place, and we worked out where things were going to be, where we were going to enter the stage, where the merchandise booth would be, and where we would put various props, where we would put posters, and all that stuff. And so at about 6:30, remember the show is supposed to start at 7, Steph, who's running the merchandise booth, runs over to me in a panic and says, hey, ESPN is here, and they told me I have to leave. I have to find a new place. I got to go somewhere else. So, well, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know why they would do that. Let me go talk to them. So I went over there, and there was a saleswoman from 980 standing there, and she seemed very annoyed. And she said, hi, this booth here at the bottom of the steps, this is for us and for Window Nation. They're the title sponsor. This is for them to promote their wares, not for you. And, I said, oh, okay. Well, this is my event. I appreciate that you want to put something up, but you got to find a new spot. I mean, I've been coordinating directly with the venue on this, and this is where we're going to sell our shirts. And without blinking an eye, the saleswoman said, I found this place. I said, oh, okay, well, I appreciate that. We didn't have to be here. I'm glad that you found this place. That's great. But again, this is my event. I'm not moving this. We can work something else out. I'm sure there's plenty of space here, but at the bottom of the steps, this is the merchandise booth, and I've coordinated this with Rob and everybody at Penn Social. This is where I'm going to be. She said, you have to understand, Window Nation is the title sponsor of this event. You have to accommodate them, and you have to accommodate us. I said, again, no, I don't have to do that. This is my event. I really appreciate that you guys did. And this is like a Sonny Corleone moment. I was willing to throw out the few $100 that they paid on the ground right then if it was in my pocket for the book in the place. Like, all right, if you're going to try to big time me, fine. Here's the money back. Get out of here. I mean, it was escalating so quickly, and it was so awkward and uncomfortable. I said, you know what? I don't want to argue with you about this. I'm not moving. But why don't we call Mark? Because he's the one I've been working with. I've never met you before. I don't know who you are. Let's call him, and he can straighten this out. And then, you know, we'll figure something out. So anyway, I called Mark and said, hey, there's a saleswoman here. We're having this altercation. She's trying to kick us out of here. And, you know, hurry up and get down here so we can resolve this. So then, Mark comes in. And in the meantime, it's about 20 minutes later, they've moved over into a corner and set up their their stuff. But so Mark comes in and says, look, you know, they're going to set up over there. Don't worry about it. But you can't just tell them to fuck off. I said, well, yes, I can. Said, no. Come on. You know, there's a sponsor involved and the station. You can't be rude to these people. Like, you know, you can't just tell them to fuck off. I said, well, yeah, I can, Mark. I mean, like you've been telling me all along, this is my event. So, you know, I'm not trying to big time anybody here, but it is now 6:45, 6:50. I've been planning this for 3 months. These people showed up 20 minutes ago. I'm not changing my plans because of this random thing. And, you know, I don't know if that's ego or whatever else, but honestly, I mean, I put so much work into this. I wasn't going to let some random person derail anything, even something as simple as a merchandise booth. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So anyway, that all resolved somehow. I don't know if Mark had a talk with them, like, hey, this guy's a jerk, just get out of his way, or if they just decided, or they realized that, you know, they saw that I was not going to be screwed with that day and just backed off. But you know, they just totally stopped bothering me after that. And then when the Window Nation people showed up, they were so gracious and so nice, and they didn't care about that booth. This whole idea that they had to have this premium real estate wasn't even in their minds. And they didn't show up until like 7:15, 7:30, after the thing was already starting. So they were not expecting to get any particular space. They brought their own stuff. They set up a table right there, right next to it, and it was fine. And this whole thing that became so awkward and so uncomfortable never had to be. And there was no reason that it had to get that way. And, you know, I'm sure that somebody there at the station hates me because I wasn't very polite. But at the same time, I wasn't going to get pushed around. This is something that I put so much work into. And no, you know, absolutely not. This is for the littles. This is not for them. And I was actually, frankly, surprised that they were there. So I hope that's a good sign for the future, that maybe Tony will be syndicated on 980, or there's some future relationship there, because they were very supportive. You know, I met a few of the other heads of the sales team that showed up. They were on stage at the beginning of the event, schmoozing with some of the folks from the show. And, you know, they were very supportive of the whole thing and of Tony. And they were really focused on making sure that he was comfortable and not being bothered by people and whatever else. And so anyway, they had that. And I hope that, you know, we hear Tony complain often about the sales weasels, but I really always thought that that was a Sapienza thing. But, you know, maybe it goes deeper than that. I don't know the whole backstory, but I certainly now have had my own taste of it. And it's so funny because so many people, you know, even people on the show that I've talked to, not just other littles, but people on the show warn me that, hey, you got to be careful of these guys. Don't let them push you around. If they give you any shit, give us a call and we'll fix it. And they never did. I never saw anybody. I never heard from anybody. Nobody tried to meddle with anything until 30 minutes before the show started. It was crazy. All right, so enough of that. I just wanted to share that story because it was a high drama in a show that otherwise went really well, aside from some AV issues.
Me off big time and me like some jack off. 30 minutes till the show and we got a Mexican standoff. Man, those weasels piss me off. I wanna burn. After Chris, you'd think I'd learn. But the weasels crossed me and now they deserve a turn. Yeah, I guess that bridge is burned. I still hear her saying, I found this place. my plans. I meet her eyes, I look her in the face and ask her, lady, don't you know who I am? What a way to start the show.
So the event itself was really more like two shows, and I think it's because there were two different audiences there. There were a lot of folks that were drawn in by the great promotion from Tony's podcast, that he was going to be there along with some of the regulars from the show. And there were those more like those of you listening to this podcast. They're just really into the jingles, or just really good supporters of what we're doing here. They wanted to meet other littles, that wanted to meet some of the jinglers and just come and kind of celebrate more like what we were trying to do in 2015. And so when the show started, there was such a crush, 500 or so people there, that you couldn't even move through the crowd. It was amazing. It was just so neat that we had that big of a turnout. But because of that, I think I spent most of the time backstage until we got started after Tony got there, because there just was no way to move around. And so once we got started, Tony did a great recap of his roast for Carville that was just such a wonderful hit. And then I had a few moments to quickly meet some of the bigs before they got the heck off the stage. So Dr. Leon Harris for a second. Tori Clark was extremely nice. And then after David Aldridge got there, he wanted to take a selfie, which was really funny because I didn't take a picture the whole night. And so how, to me, in my mind, how humbling and ridiculous that David Aldridge wanted to take a picture on his phone. So the first half, as I mentioned earlier, we really wanted to make this whole thing red meat, just songs everybody likes. And we tried to put a lot of the more crowd-pleasing tunes up front that would be familiar to everybody. And then put stuff like the Schwitz break and whatever else in the back, because I felt like we would have a more welcoming audience after the intermission. And it turned out just to be just that way. You know, the opening hour and a half or so was wonderful when all the bigs were there cheering us on. I loved being able to perform Edith McManus with Jeannie 2 feet away, and like when John Fitzpatrick did Just Once, the Red Lobster song for Jeannie. I mean, some people, some of the bigs were so supportive, and just it was so cool to perform for them. Tony, last year, watched the show from about 5 feet away, smiling and drinking a beer the whole time, just really enjoying it. This time, I don't know that he heard a single song other than maybe Hamilton before he left, because he was so busy meeting and greeting everybody. And I think he really enjoyed it. But he wasn't able to experience it in much the same way it was last time. Instead, this time Michael and Liz really filled that role, and they were there cheering along most of the time when Liz wasn't taking pictures. For the second half, the crowd started to thin out a little bit. We got maybe down to 200 or so people, and that to me was a much more enjoyable show, because in the beginning it was just so damn noisy. So for the first half of the show, it was almost like it was the opening act. Like, we were performing, but the crowd was talking so much that you could hear it over the din, and they were very receptive and cheering and stuff, but it was just a much noisier atmosphere. In the second half, people were singing along with the lyrics, mouthing along with the lyrics. They seemed to know everything. When we did the Schwitz break, it actually got a really good reaction, and especially Torn, which I wasn't even gonna do, but Jason Fuse really pushed for that one. He thought that was the best Schwitz song we've got. And so that was really heartwarming to me, that this ridiculously stupid bathrobe medley idea that I had actually got a pretty good response. Because when we were preparing for it, we were all laughing that there's going to be 4 people at this event that love this, and they're all on stage. And then one last thing, or I guess 2 last things. There were people there, and maybe some of you listening, that were wearing shirts from the 2014 Kickstarter. And that was so cool for me because... you know, it meant that people have been supporting TK Jingles for almost 3 years now. And that's just really, it's just really gratifying that folks have stuck with this and continue to support this ridiculously silly waste of time that we all engage in. And then lastly, folks were calling for an encore. for We Didn't Start the Fire. And what I really liked about that was that some people actually remember that song, because that was 3 years ago now. And while that may have been a definitive moment in changing the landscape of the jingles, now it's kind of a footnote. I mean, so long ago that I'm surprised that anybody even remembers that we ever did that one. So if you're listening to this podcast, a lot of people came up to me during the event, said, hey, I love the podcast. Are you going to do this from the podcast? That asked me about the shadow. That meant a lot. So thank you for listening to this show. It means so much to me that people continue to download it. This has been a very talk heavy episode, and I hope you enjoy a little behind the scenes. I mean, next week we'll get back to a more traditional format. The Ask Clown engineers at Penn Social did not record the event. They were supposed to, but they totally failed, and instead recorded a video of all the karaoke lyrics with no sound, instead of recording the sound with no video, which is all we needed. So they did kind of the opposite. So I've got the lyrics. I didn't need that. But so instead of being able to play you some of the cool digital audio highlights of the event, as I'd planned to all summer long, what we're going to do instead is, there were essentially 10 main performers. There's 10 episodes of this podcast till Tony comes back. I've asked folks to record one or two of their medleys and send those in basically in one live take. And we'll play that here to give you a little bit of a flavor of what it was like that night and some of the songs that we did, because they're all great songs. They're all songs you love and are familiar with if you've ever listened to this show before. So we got a great summer ahead of us. The Shadow is nearly recorded. I'm the last one to record my part, so we'll be getting to that in the next couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to the epic conclusion of Murder at the Schwitz. And to all of you who've sent me personal notes, tweets, Facebook messages, emails, various other greetings, thank you so much. I don't always have time to respond to everything, but I read every one. And it means a lot to me that after 3+ years, we're still doing this, and that so many people that night were saying, not what if we do this next year, but when we do this next year, what's going to happen? And so that level of excitement, enthusiasm and support really keeps me going, and thank you so much for listening. Next week, back to a standard show, lots more songs, so come back and tune in. Goodbye, RG3. That was an unprecedented fall. You're still great at selling sandwiches, but not so good at football. And we all hoped it would work when they gave up 30 picks in a trade to get the star from Baylor, the one with the trademark name. And your rookie year, you were so great for Shannon and his kid, and you turned all your critics into unbridled optimists. But they finally had to bench you because you never win. You might figure out one day, but not for the Redskins. Hello, RG3. Welcome to the Cleveland Browns. It serves me right for crushing you. Now you play for my hometown. And unless you change, well then by week 3 you'll be hurt. And when you're cut by Cleveland, man, that's gonna hurt even worse. And your rookie year, you were so great for Shannon and his kid, and you turned all your critics into unbridled optimists. And now you walk in the footsteps of Tim Couch and Brady Quinn. And if you want to avoid that hall of shame,
from David Fletcher in Mesa, Arizona, thank you for making this wonderful community possible. You know, I didn't do this. The community coalesced around itself. I mean, I didn't even facilitate it, and I'm as stunned as anybody else.
He's just the sun.
Appreciative.
They all revolve around it.